तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स अपारुताते संनतस्य द्वाराये सोतवन्तो कमञ्चन्तु सद्धान्ते Somebody's beating the drums of the deathless. In celebration of our Dhamma talk this evening. This is what the Buddha said after he became enlightened. He said, now I go to Benares to beat the drum of the deathless. When we hear the thunder, is it any wonder that people in primitive societies all the world over believe that this is the voice of God, or that some kind of heavenly noise, a divine noise, the rumble, a kind of profound sound that shakes as if it's shaking the whole sky and the whole world. And this is the imagery that the Buddha was drawing on when he used this phrase, the drum of the deathless. The sound that comes out of the drum of the deathless, it's not an ordinary sound. It's not something that you can hear just with your ears, but it's something that kind of resonates through your whole body. And this is why listening to Dhamma has a or can have a transformative impact. In the little verse I recited at the beginning of the talk, of most talks, wide open are the gates of the deathless, let those with ears make certain of their faith. And so it takes a very special kind of listening to be able to hear the Dhamma. In the fire sermon we just recited, it says, Evang pasang bhikkhave sutava arya savako. Seeing thus, monks, the learned, or the noble disciple who can hear, who has listened, and has listened to the Dhamma with a sense of openness, like opening one's whole body and mind to it, making this sense of acceptance of the Dhamma. And this applies both to like acceptance of the teachings and also the Dhamma in the sense of the phenomena, what's actually going on, sight, sound, smell, taste, touches, and mental events. This also is one of the meanings of Kuan Yin. We talk about the Chinese Bodhisattva Kuan Yin. Kuan Shi Yin is one who listens to the sounds of the world, listens with compassion to the sounds of the world. But of course, then we have to ask, what is the world? In the fire sermon, it talks about the all of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, mental events, consciousness for each sense, the contact, feelings that arise, and greed, hatred, and delusion that come from those feelings. And this is the all. And this is the world, this is our world, which we're stuck in the middle of it. We're sitting here in the middle of these senses with the world spread out around us. This world we carry with us every day of our lives is this world of sense experience, which is this field spread out all around with us in the middle of it. We are quite literally sitting in the middle of the world. Is it any wonder we get conceited? Is it any wonder that we think the world revolves around us? Because, in fact, it does. The world does revolve around me. Or at least my world does, my world that I can experience. So when we listen with compassion and care to this world, it means we're listening to sight, sound, smell, taste, touches, the mental events, phenomena. And we stay receptive to those things. This is part of the nature of cognition, of consciousness, according to Buddhism, is that it's receptive. It will, as it were, receive the impressions and information that's supplied to it through the senses. So in training ourselves to be alert listeners, we're also training our consciousness, our ability to know, our ability to understand. The more quiet our mind is, the more we're able to listen. And the more delicate and subtle are the things we're able to hear. This doesn't mean sleepy quiet. It doesn't mean sitting there and dozing off and zoning out. This is not listening. You should have a sense of clarity. If you listen to a Dhamma talk, you should be able to, at the end of it, you should be able to answer questions about that Dhamma talk. If your mindfulness is strong, this is how they train people to learn how to listen to music. And they'll give tests to people if you're learning advanced jazz or something like that. They'll play you a passage, a very difficult saxophone solo, for example. Lots of notes. John Coltrane, somebody playing very fast and very abstract. And then they'll kind of stop it and they'll say, okay, two bars previously, why did he play an E flat? And you have to remember what he was playing and what the context was, what the harmonic context was, and so on. And so that you can understand what's going on in a piece of music. Same thing with the Dhamma. We should be able to, at the end of the talk, we should be able to answer what did the teacher say about such and such? What did he say about speaking? What did he say about listening? What did he say about thunder? And you should be able to answer those things. This afternoon I was talking with somebody and they they said that they noticed that last night I was speaking very softly, and a group of guys came in and we were talking in the evening and my voice was very quiet. They could hardly hear me. I don't know if it's any better this evening. Please, if I'm too soft, then please let me know. And they said they couldn't help wondering, why is Bhante speaking so softly? Because he's feeling melancholy and depressed because he's just had a deep meditation? Because, I don't know, because he's been sleeping all day and he's just woken up? I don't know. I guess maybe there's lots of reasons, but one reason was that I've just been reflecting on this thing about listening and sound. And the more sound we make, the more we have to filter it out, we have to shut out. Of course, normally in the world, people in the world have to be subjected to all kinds of different speech and sounds and so on. Sometimes harsh, sometimes gentle, sometimes sincere, sometimes cynical, sometimes angry, sometimes hilarious, sometimes sarcastic, sometimes truthful. And we have to hear all this kind of speech, and somehow we have to learn to filter it out. We have to have like a damage control. If you pay too much attention to wrong or unskillful forms of speech, then your mind will go off in unskillful directions. And then when our hearing, our listening is unskillful, then our speaking is unskillful. Remember that both listening and speaking are acts, they're choices. Like listening isn't something that we're subjected to, in a sense. I mean, in a sense, yes, of course, and the sound happens and comes into our mind, but it's we who choose to respond to that, or what way we respond to it. And if we're hearing sounds that are unpleasant to us, that we disagree with, then we can, if we like, we can just pay attention to the silence that's around the sound. Maybe there's one person in the room that's saying something we find offensive. Everybody else in the room is being silent. Why don't we listen to them instead? That's much more subtle, isn't it? Normally, if we're in a room, someone's saying something that's maybe aggressive or whatever, we find that offensive, and then we get upset by it, we react to it. It's our choice to listen to that. We could choose to listen to the other people. What would that mean? What would that mean instead of listening to the person who's making noise, if we're listening to those who are being silent? Perhaps we might listen to how they are responding to that aggression which is coming out of the speaker at that time. And as with our listening, so too with our speaking. And it is even more so, this is our choice. And as was said by Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas, he said, it's not that what goes into a man that makes him pure or impure, but what comes into a person's mouth that makes him pure or impure. You can't be purified by what you eat, but it's what comes out of your mouth that makes you pure or impure. And so when we are speaking, we also need to investigate this as well. Continually to reflect on it, how our speech is it true or not? Earlier in the week I was speaking with somebody in Sydney about workshops at the Buddhist Library. Tomorrow is the final workshop at the Buddhist Library, and One of the people from the group was saying, oh, what do we tell the people running the Buddhist library? They say, we're not going to renew our workshops. I said, well, tell them the truth. Say we've been going there for more than 2 years and we still only get a small number of people there. We get many more people going at other venues and we just can't keep it up anymore. We don't have the time and resources. It's not working. So sometimes truth is difficult for people to hear, but they have to hear it. It is important that we don't use the truth like a weapon. Sometimes we can use truth, or perhaps one side of the truth, or one aspect of the truth we can use to attack people with. Or we can use like cleverness and logic in order to like dispute with people and defeat them. So this is something we have to be careful of. It doesn't mean that it's wrong to dispute with people, but the aim of the dispute should be to arrive at truth. The aim of disagreeing with somebody should be able to arrive at what is true and what is good, and not to simply defeat the other person. In the Vinaya, the rule against wrong speech came about because one of the monks was in debate with the wanderers from another sect, and they said some lie. I can't remember exactly what it was, or even whether the story says what it was, but they made up some kind of lie or story in order to defeat the sectarians. And they said, well, you can't let them get away with it, you know, you've got to beat them somehow. This is where you forget about the Dhamma. The point isn't just to beat people. And this is a point where exactly the same point was actually argued by, I think it was Tertullian, one of the fathers of the Christian church, and he in fact said the opposite, and he said that it is justifiable to lie in the name of the church. But that's not a Buddhist teaching. We don't agree with that. It's never to the advantage of the Dhamma to be lying. Of course, then there's this thing about the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It's somewhat different. What do we mean when we say the whole truth? That's not easy to know. Obviously, we don't mean like literally everything. You can't say literally everything all the time, because that then becomes meaningless. You know, I've probably mentioned this story before here, but one of my favorite illustrations of that was in the short story by Georges Louis Bourget, the story called The Aleph. And in this story of the Aleph was found, discovered on the stairs down to this person's basement. One day, as he was going down into his basement, there it was, lodged on the stairs, the Aleph. And the Aleph is a point in the universe through which you can see every other point in the universe. And so looking through there, you can see everything. The whole world is revealed. Now, the unfortunate tragedy of this incident was that through a stroke of very, very bad luck, the Aleph happened to get lodged in the staircase of a fellow who was a poet. And so he decided that since he can now see everything in the world, he was going to write a poem with everything in the world in rhyming couplets. And he spent the last 5 years describing one portion of the back fence on a sheep station in South Australia. And was just getting ready to move on to the next part of his poem. So this is the whole truth, yeah? So there's a very beautiful story by Bourget. So the point of it, of course, is like the art of writing, with the art of poetry or prose writing, it's not so much what you say as what you leave out. You can just say anything. Anybody can sit down there with a pen and paper and just splat out a lot of words. But what are those things that you're leaving out? So this is why we have to be careful when it comes to this thing like the whole truth. It's very difficult. Very often our tendencies are either to kind of blat out too much, especially if we're motivated by anger or annoyance. We get annoyed with someone, we just say too many things, and we say things that are very hurtful and things that cannot be recalled once they've been said. Something which can't be unsaid. Or else we tend to not say anything at all, go to the other extreme. And so this is, in a sense, this is an abdication of responsibility. This is something that you see in a monastery like this one, where people come, and many people come through a place like this, and I guess they all come seeking something. Everyone who comes through the gates is looking for something, whether it be enlightenment or lottery numbers or whatever, I don't know. And of course, they don't always find it. They don't always find that thing that they're looking for. And of course, it happens quite commonly, quite normally. Some people might come here and then, oh, they don't like it. Something's wrong with it. Something's wrong with the place, wrong with the people, wrong with the abbot, something's wrong with the building, something's wrong with the monks, something's wrong with the nuns, something's wrong with the anagarikas, something's wrong with the lay people. Something's wrong with the food, something's wrong with the shower, something's wrong with the toilet, something's wrong with the tractor. Usually the poor old tractor gets the blame for most things. And a lot of the time people feel very reluctant to work with that. And again, you know, we don't want to be encouraging people to be just coming here and being very critical of things. We do expect a good degree of acceptance and forgiveness. And even within the community, there are people doing very different kinds of things. And, you know, we expect a degree of sort of mutual respect and appreciation for that. And some people are very good at being quiet and just going back to their cave or to their kuti and just being very secluded and meditative. And that's very wonderful, it's very praiseworthy. It's a very beautiful way to live the holy life. Other people like to do some more study and learning the Buddha's teaching. That's also something that's very praiseworthy. Anybody who wants to study and learn the Dhamma should be respected very greatly for that. Because they're making it possible for the Dhamma to be re-understood and re-translated, reinvented, if you like, for us, for our generation, rediscovered. Not reinvented, but like rediscovered, reformulated, re-expressed. So that's very beautiful. Other people will give more service in helping out and doing things in the monastery. It's also something that's to be greatly respected, because there are so many things that need to be done. And, you know, I said before that, you know, most people come through the gates, or everyone comes through looking for something. Usually they don't come through looking for bookkeeping to do. They might come looking for a nice quiet place or somewhere they can do their meditation or get their questions answered or something. But they don't actually come very often saying, "Oh, please let me build your amenities block for you." And so when we do find people who are willing to help with those things, then we should be very grateful for that. It's extremely precious. And everybody needs to have some room and some acceptance around these different kinds of roles that people are playing in the monastery. So when we are in a phase where we're going to be doing a lot of building and setting up things, setting up systems and ways of working, then there will be some busyness, there will be some noise, there will be some chat. And it's not easy for those of us who get more involved at the business end of the monastery. It's not easy to always know when to stop that and when to restrain that. So that's our practice, to know how much work do I need to do in the office, and then just to stop and take some time to go back to our kuti and do some meditation. You know, when does, you know, taking care and responsibility with our job, when does that kind of, there's a grey area where that kind of leaks into just kind of proliferation and lack of clarity. So we have to do that, and we have to be conscious of the effect that that has on other people. If there's a lot of work going on, activity, discussions, people working on the computer and so on, that then has an effect on other people in the monastery. And so we should try as much as we can to be sensitive to that, not let that disturb other people in their meditation and so on. Especially while we are all, you know, trying to make use of quite limited facilities. And we all understand that the facilities we have now are not adequate, and we're trying to work to improve that. Meanwhile, we have to make some compromises. So I think it's very important that we should make the atmosphere or the vibe in the monastery as positive and uplifting as we can. So we should all have a think about that and reflect on that. How can we improve that within our own practice? How can we maybe give a little bit more? Maybe what we need to give is silence. Maybe what we need to give is service. When guests come and people come to visit the monastery, we should try to greet them as kindly and politely as we can. Show them where the bathroom is, show them they need some drinking water and so on. If they need to go to their place, then we show them their place and make sure that they're set up okay. Trying to do this with a sense of grace, so that people don't feel as if they are imposing. And so we need to try to ask ourselves and reflect when people come here, is this creating the impression of a very harmonious and uplifting spiritual community? When people come in, do they have to listen to very harsh and negative speech? Is that something that people should have to be subjected to when they walk through the door? Should people have to listen to, you know, loud discussions and arguments about sort of mundane matters? I must say that in the time I've been here at Santi, I think most of the time I think that we've been pretty good in that respect. And I think that it is a very kind monastery, and the community is very helpful and thoughtful. And of course we're not perfect, but generally I think that we're good in that respect, and I congratulate everybody and encourage them to keep going, to reflect what else that they can do to help and assist with these kinds of things, to make sure that we keep that standard. And as I've said before, I'm not really so worried if we have the the tidiest monastery in the world. I don't think we're in any danger of that anytime soon. I'm not that concerned if we have the strictest monastery in the world. I don't think we're in any danger of that either. But I wouldn't mind putting in an entry for the competition for the kindest monastery in the world. That would be quite nice. I don't know whether we'd win it or not. And so this is the policy that I've tried to take since I've been here, with mixed success, I have to say, of just being accepting to people who come. And just what I was mentioning at the beginning of the talk, like in our minds, we have that quality of acceptance, compassionate acceptance of whatever's happening. And I try to take that same attitude when people come through. It's like compassionate acceptance. I don't expect people to be perfect. Quite the opposite. I expect them to be imperfect. Of course they are. Many times people have told me that, you know, such and such a person's a problem, such and such a person shouldn't be here, blah, 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 and complains about this and that person. And I always try to listen to those complaints and then watch. And occasionally, very, very rarely, I've had to actually do something, maybe three or four times in the last 3 years. It was about once a year that where I've actually have had to ask somebody to leave. But you know, there's been many, many times when I've had to listen to complaints about various people, maybe a dozen times a year or more. And so always my attitude is just hold that situation and try to watch it and so on. And I have a faith, that a very deep faith, that there's like a river that we're flowing in when we're practicing the holy life. And we come to join the Sangha and become part of a Sangha community, that's a river. That's like a broad and deep stream that's pulling us, flowing us down to Nibbana. And of course there are ripples on the surface, there are eddies, there are currents, there are whirlpools. But the main flow of that, the main direction, just keeps on going very serenely and very strongly without being disturbed. This is the way I try to think about our practice here. So that's why I don't go around too much sort of trying to interfere and saying do this, do that, and poking my nose in, making sure everything's done exactly the right way. Only when I feel that it's really necessary. Occasionally you may say a word to people, to somebody, and try to, if they're going a bit out one way, then sort of nudge them back into the stream. So I think it's important as a community to appreciate this kind of long sense of what we're doing. You know, what we're doing is not like a little trickle, it's not like a little creek that dries up in the summer. And with all due respect, I kind of get the idea that a lot of the Buddhist groups around the place, we've had a lot of problems with Buddhist centres and Buddhist groups of various kinds in Sydney in the recent times, and I kind of get the feeling that's what these places and these groups are like, that they're like these kind of gushing streams, that there's a heavy rainfall and they kind of gush down and they make a lot of noise, and then the rain stops for a week or two and they dry up and there's nothing left. This is how I kind of feel. Whereas when we're becoming part of the Sangha, it's not like that. It's this broad river, it flows all year round. Even if there's a drought, maybe the level will drop a little bit, but the river will keep on flowing. And so this is what we're trying to embody. We're trying to embody this feeling of this flow of the holy life, like a long-term, slow flow. It's not necessarily obvious, but it's very, very powerful. You try to stop it, you can't stop it. That's all I have to say for this evening. I offer that to your reflection. I hope you manage to listen to it, get some benefit from it. If anyone has any comments and questions, I'd be most interested to hear.